Hello, and welcome to the Online Business for Black Women podcast. I'm Keisha White, business mentor for new coaches, consultants, and service providers. And I created this podcast for Black women who aspire to start profitable businesses online. Here, we share transparent stories of overcoming the challenges that come with building an online business, along with actionable strategies that you can implement in a business of your own. To get started, sign up for my free masterclass on the three steps to book high-paying clients consistently in the show notes. So let's dive into the episode. Today's episode of the podcast is brought to you by Victorious Paper Company. If you are looking to improve your mindset and increase your productivity in 2021, now is the perfect time to be planning for that. I recommend that you try a beautiful daily planner designed by Victorious Paper Company. With your purchase, a portion of every sale will even go towards feeding a family in need. So not only are you buying an amazing planner to help you stay on track in the new year and to help you reach your goals, but you are also giving back at the same time. And you can get the gift of productivity and give the gift of a nutritious meal for the holidays by purchasing this planner. So if you are interested, make sure you visit victoriouspaper.co. And you can even use the code Keisha21 at checkout for 20% off. And Keisha is K-E-S-H-I-A-2-1 to get 20% off your purchase. Okay. Hey, everyone. I am back for another episode, and I am here today with Suzanne Marika. Yeah. Hi, Suzanne. Thank you for joining me.
Hi, Keisha. I am so happy to be here with you.
Yes. Well, yes, I'm excited to have you. And so before we dive into the questions, so first introduce yourself and tell us about what you do in your business.
Well, Keisha, I am a certified public accountant, and I actually still practice as a CPA. And, you know, I started my firm probably about 13 years ago. And, you know, prior to starting my firm, it was interesting. It's been a long journey in accounting. I actually started accounting at 14. Can you believe that? 14
wow,
years old.
Wow, oh my gosh.
yes. You know, my dad had a CPA firm for 30 years when I was growing up. And when he had me, he was actually starting his firm. So I always joke around that he was balancing balance sheets while balancing me in one lap, right? and so I started working with him when I was 14. And so when I went to college, you know, naturally accounting came very easy for me because, you know, as Malcolm Gladwell says, it takes 10 years to become an expert at something. And so it was one of those subjects that, you know, it came so easy that, you know, I could ace all of the exams because I started, you know, 10 years before everybody else had started. And later on went to Arthur Anderson, which was in Chicago. And after Arthur Anderson changed in terms of what happened down here in Houston, I later on went to KPMG and started my business right after I had my daughter. So my business and my daughter are about the same age. She just celebrated her 13th birthday.
Oh, nice. Well, good. Well, that's definitely great that you were able to start so soon in life. You sounded like that whiz kid, 14-year-old, to be doing balance sheets and stuff at 14. So perfect. So I guess a quick question there. So since you started so early, did you know you always wanted to do accounting as your own business on your own? Or did you ever consider like working with your dad or getting an accounting job? Like what made you decide to go ahead and do it off on your own as your own business?
You know, when I was growing up, my dad would actually tell me never be an accountant, whatever you need, never be an accountant. You know, you work a lot of hours is what he told me. But he didn't realize that by exposing his daughter to it at a young age, he was actually creating a love for it. Mm-hmm. and I always tell entrepreneurs this, that, you know, the earlier you start your children, especially as you're starting your businesses, not only is it a great tax write-off hiring your children, right? Because, you know, you can give them, you know, it's a salary deduction, hint, 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 if you hire your children. And if you pay them less than the standard deduction, it could be, depending on your legal entity, it could be a tax-free salary for them, right? Depending on the legal entity. But it also gives them valuable experience that later on when they grow up, they can, you know, it's like they get a head start, right? If it takes 10,000 hours to become an expert, and you start them at that young age, you know, they're going to be an expert just when all their friends are graduating from school. So, you know, I didn't know that I was going to be an accountant, but it came so easy and naturally that I think that it just made a natural shift for me. You know, I just love numbers. I love the fact that numbers never lie, that things balance. And then, you know, as I really got into it, I could see how I could change the lives of entrepreneurs. So, you know, it was just an amazing experience.
I love that. So good. So tell me a little bit about like the balancing act of, because we have a lot of listeners who may be moms and who may have like a kid and they also want to start a business. So how did you balance like business and also having your daughter as an entrepreneur getting started?
You know, it's interesting because, you know, as I was transitioning and, you know, at the point that I was expecting my daughter, I was still working my corporate job. And I had this client in Toronto, and I lived in Houston, Texas. Mm-hmm. And I had this client in Toronto because at the company that I was with, I was in charge of their Canadian operations. And I would have to fly from Houston to Toronto. And if you guys know, if you ever have these direct flights that happen a lot, eventually you get what I call these propeller jets. They put you on this, it's not a real propeller jet, but it feels like a propeller jet. You know, it has like two seats on one side and one seat on the other. And you fight to get like the seat that's by itself, right? Well, here I was like 7 months pregnant, right? And you know, I probably shouldn't even been on a plane at this point. And I could barely fit in the seat. Like the belly was everything. Like the belly had to actually squeeze into the seat, right? and we were flying from Houston to Toronto for work. And I was thinking to myself, you know what? My life is about to change. My life is about to change. It's about to change big time. And you know, I had never thought that my life was going to change until I couldn't fit in this airplane seat. And literally, as I was flying to Toronto, I was thinking, what am I going to do next? You know, am I going to always be on this flight back and forth and I'm never going to see my daughter, or what is going to change? And so, you know, I had watched my dad start his business, you know, and I knew that it was possible. And I said, what if I could start my business and I would have this life where I would be able to really be able to, you know, be able to spend my time with my daughter. Mm-hmm. And that's when I got the idea of, you know what, I could start my own accounting firm. I already did public accounting. I already understood public accounting. I already understood taxes. You know, why can't I just start this? Mm-hmm. And I was so excited, you know, because as soon as I went on maternity leave, I eventually decided I wasn't going to come back. And I told everyone I wasn't going to come back. And it was going to be me and Florence, who's my daughter, against the world. You know, it was going to be me and her against the world, me and my little boo. Mm-hmm. And it was fun because in the beginning, you know, I got to bring her to all the meetings. You know, she became the mascot of our women business organizations here in Houston. She would come with me to like all the luncheons, you know, and it was fun. But at some point we started to get really busy, right? Because, you know, as you grow and you scale, you start to get more clients, you start to network, they start to see your work and they start to get out there and they start to get to know you. And you know, being kind of the driver that I am, being one that really takes pride in my work, you know, my original goal was just to have a few clients, spend a time with my daughter. But pretty soon I was landing these contracts. I was landing these contracts with these major cities, you know, like City of Houston's one of our clients. You know, we have some of the local cities around here. We were listed as a Goldman Sachs 10,000 small business. And what I found was the more that I succeeded, the less time I got to spend with my daughter. Mm. And because I was so in love with the work that I did and so in love with like really just making an impact in my world, right? With my clients and seeing them super succeed that. And I also loved accounting, right? I can't help it. Just like most entrepreneurs, you guys do what you do because you absolutely love doing what you do, right? Mm-hmm. And I love what I did so much that frankly, I could have did it for free, right? Because that's just how it is when you love what you do. And that's exactly what happened. I started to do it for free. And not necessarily free, but what I mean was I was offering my price at such a low point, right? I was offering my price at such a low point that really I wasn't able to really scale the business. And so what was happening was I was losing time with my daughter. I was working all the time. And my business literally turned into like this worst nightmare because at some point I looked back at my life and by then I had two children. I had a son and a daughter and they were being raised by a nanny. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until I literally started to turn around and really look back at my life and I go, you know, what is important to me? What is really important to me? Why did we really do this? You know, that I really started to align my actions with my intentions and what I wanted and started to create, you know, actions that reflected it. And one of the things that was really important to me and instrumental to me was really the book Profit First. Mm-hmm. And I think as, you know, most of us that go to school, whether you go for business or you work with your accountant, right? One of the first things that they teach you is revenue minus expenses equals profit, right? Mm-hmm. And when you focus on your revenue, right, you focus on sales, and that's exactly what that accounting equation teaches us to do. Focus on sales. Whatever you do, drop your prices, you'll make up in volume is what they teach you, right? Mm-hmm. And you're responsible, you pay your bills because you don't want debt, right? You don't want to have problems with the government. So you want to make sure you pay your payroll taxes. Then naturally, we think that profit is going to be a buy factor, right? But the problem is for most business owners, right? And Keisha, you work with a lot of business owners, so you probably feel this and you've probably seen this when you've seen their financial statements, that when they focus on sales, they focus on being responsible. Profit, first of all, they don't usually know what it is until the end of the year at tax time. Mm-hmm. And second of all, it's this thing that's left over that usually isn't even worth it, right? And for me, it got to the point that, you know, I was working so hard and not charging enough that I would have been better off. My husband literally sat me down on a Sunday night and said, "Suzanne, honey, you're working all the time. You quit your job to spend time with our kids, and I hardly get to see you." And he said, "You know, I think you'll be better off getting a JOB."
Oh, wow.
And you know, that's like an entrepreneur's worst nightmare, right?
Mm-hmm, like that gut punch, like, oh, I don't want that.
Exactly. Oh, we never want, what did they say? We work 80 hours, so we never have to work 40, right? Mm-hmm. And so really, it was really at that point, that was the turning point for me because, you know, and that's where I found the book Profit First. And what the concept of profit first is, you know what, you take your profit first. You run your business based upon what you intended it to do. So instead of revenue minus expenses equals profit, it's revenue minus profit equals expenses. You literally take your profit first. And in profit first, what happens is you have like percentage allocation. There's a percentage that goes to profit of all your revenue, right? You guys heard of Dave Ramsey and the envelope system, very mm-hmm. similar to that, but for businesses. And in businesses, you have these bank accounts that act as envelopes. And literally a certain percentage of your revenue immediately goes to profit. A certain percentage of revenue immediately goes to your tax account to reserve for taxes at the end of the year. And a certain percentage goes to your owner's pay, so you pay yourself first. And then whatever's left over, that goes towards expenses. And Keisha, I have to tell you, that changed my life. That changed my life, you know, because suddenly, you know, I was able to charge at a price that allowed me to scale my business and eventually hire the right people, mm-hmm. put them in the right places so that I could step away from my business, right, to be with you to do podcasting today. It allowed me to really be able to put not only the right people in the right place, but the right equipment at the place, and then generate enough margins in order to have profits so that my husband didn't tell me, "Suzanne, you need to go out and get a JOB."
Yes, it makes such a difference when you are pricing properly. Because I kind of went through the same thing a little bit when I first quit my job doing web design. The websites were so time consuming, and I realized for what I was charging, I was like, wait, I'm having to stack on project after project. I have no free time over here ordering DoorDash, not working out. And it was just a hot mess. So I was like, let me increase my rates so I can work with fewer people and get my time back. So good. So did you have any like mindset issues or anything when you started to raise your prices? Because I know a lot of times people, they know they need to raise it and they know they have an income number they want to hit. But sometimes in their mindset, they tell themselves different things like, oh, people won't pay me more and all that type of stuff. And then they end up not doing it. So did you deal with any mindset stuff with the price increase?
Oh, yes, Keisha. Oh, plenty of mindset issues, plenty. You know, and I think it's what I find with my clients, it's very similar to that, right? You know, when we first start our businesses, what do? We price shop, right? We call other CPAs, we call our competitors, and we blind out our phone number, right? Because we don't want them to know who we are. We go, "How much are you charging? If I would come in your office with this situation and this is going on, how much would you charge me?" And what happens is, you know, we're not charging based upon our value. We're charging based on the market rate, right? And there's a reason that, you know, half of small businesses go out of business after a couple of years. There's a reason for that, right? Mm-hmm. Because they're not charging enough. So when you're pricing based upon your competitors, right, that are going to be going out of business in a couple of years, you know, that's exactly what happens to us, right? Mm-hmm. We go out of business. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, first of all, that was the first trap that I fell into, right? And then the second trap was, you know, know what? I'm just getting started. Yeah, I got 10 years of experience, but I'm just getting started. You know, and I just want to get customers to the door. I just want to get revenue because if I do more clients, right, I'm going to get more jobs. I'm going to get more customers, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, and so there's a temptation to lowball, right? Lowball your prices to get more customers to the door, right? Mm-hmm. And it really wasn't until I said, you know what? I want to offer my services at a certain quality. Mm-hmm. I want to make a certain impact in entrepreneurs' lives, right? But I can't do this if I can't put the best people on it. If I have to put a bunch of C players on the job, I can't have the same impact in the world that I'm going to be proud of at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. And what I realized is, you know, if I want to work with A players and I want to bring in the best and brightest and I want to offer insurance and I want to offer 401ks because I want people on my team that's going to really change the world and really drive our mission forward to eradicate entrepreneurial poverty, right? Then I need to have A players. And so really, you know, and A players are not going to work for free. They're not. The only one that's going to work for free is us, the entrepreneur. And if you don't pay entrepreneur or A players at a certain rate, they're going to go down to your competitor, right? They're going to, because they have plenty of opportunities. And so really having your price, you know, at a point that allows you to offer the quality of services at a point that you're going to be proud of is extremely critical for that.
It is very, very critical because that also kind of reminds me too, your journey sounds a little bit similar to mine, even though I was doing the work myself. But when I was, underpriced, I felt like I had to like rush through people's projects and they could have like looked better, like the work quality could have. But because I was undercharging, I was just having to rush and hurry up and go to the next person's project. But once I increased, then I could like take my time and make sure everybody's project was like the best, excellent, most excellent quality ever. So I totally get that. So exactly. Very good. Yeah.
You can take less clients, right? Mm-hmm. And spend more time providing services. We call it the Pareto principle in Profit First.
Oh, nice. And
what Pareto says is that, you know, you're going to spend 80% of your resources, time, energy, effort, and passion on just 20% of your bottom line.
Mm-hmm. That is very, very true. Like all those things that you come to realizations once you see the business in real life, because I guess when we're coming from our jobs, we don't realize all this. But once real life hits, you know.
Exactly. So what happens if we flip it? What happens if we flip it and focus on our on that 20% that's driving 80% of our bottom line?
Mm-hmm. Yes. And that is the recipe for growth right there for sure. Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, good, good. So I guess another question, have you, what has been like your biggest challenge with growing your business? I know 13 years is definitely a huge amount of experience. So it sounds like I know the profit piece was a challenge, but was there anything else in the business that was like a big challenge and how did you overcome that along your journey?
You know, I think that the biggest piece is, and this is more so if you're scaling a business. So, you know, if you're in, everybody has different goals and different dreams. You know, some people say, you know, I want a mom and pop business. I want it just me. And those businesses are important, right? Because those are the businesses at the end of the day that create the memories, right? Those ice cream shops down the street where you take your kids to, those are where the memories are. And then there's some people that go, hey, I want to scale. I want to be a 7-figure business, right? Mm-hmm. And I always had the vision that I wanted to scale. I wanted to be a big accounting firm. I wanted to have major government clients. I wanted to have major private tax clients. You know what I mean? I didn't want to be a small shop. And one of the biggest mistakes that I made starting out was not necessarily putting the right people in the right place. Mm-hmm. And it's hard, you know, because when you're first starting out, the first people that you turn to are your friends, your family, who they know, you know what I mean? And the thing is, yeah, everybody wants a paycheck and everybody is proud to say they do this or that, but not everybody is gifted to do the work that they have been given in this particular assignment. Now, everybody has a gift, but maybe not in this role. Mm-hmm. And really starting to realize that, you know, although we're created equal and that we have a gift and a reason to be in this world, not all of our gifts are the same. Mm-hmm. And so really when you're looking at roles and when you're looking to align, being able to match the passion of the person with their talent in the right role. And that's where you have genius that's created. And when you can put people in their zone of genius, that's where you can have a company that can scale.
Very, very good point there. Because I can see that being something too, that you just kind of have to learn after you dive in, and maybe it gets messy and you have to make some mistakes. But like you said, once you realize putting people in the right place, that's definitely going to make the business flow. And I know run a lot smoother when you're able to do that. So very good. So one question for you, with you saying you work with those larger companies and like government contracts, like, so how'd you go about like breaking into that when you were new and kind of like just getting started?
You know, one of the things that really helped in terms of getting those contracts was having the right background. Mm. And, you know, when I started my business, I had already worked in this field for 10 years, you know, not including the teenage years. You know, I had started with Anderson, right, which was Big Four public accounting firm. And then I later on went to KPMG. Now at Anderson, I did primarily financial services. So I had like your Goldman Sachs, your, back then it was called Bank One, you know, and I had a lot of those large SEC clients. Komatsu was one of my clients. But when I went to KPMG, a lot of my clients were, you know, the auto manufacturers as well as the government sector. And so, you know, I had learned to put together those CAFRs and those fancy financial statements. And so when I started my business, when I naturally went to bid for those jobs, I had the right experience behind me in order to attract those government clients, right? Because, you know, at that time, and this is another thing that you have to be careful with pricing, because not all the time, not all government contracts are good contracts. Mm-hmm. And I do talk about that in my book, Profit First Minority Business Enterprises. But, you know, not all contracts are good government. And there's a lot of prestige saying, I have this huge government contracts. But even if you have these $1 million contracts, if you're not pricing right? And if you don't have positive margins, negative margins just begets negative margins. So you have to be careful when you're getting into that, first of all. And really what made it easier for me to enter in was having the right skill set to talk the lingo that of the work that needed to be done, and the lingo that the person that was in charge of the procurement of the project could understand, and show that I had that experience. So if you're going to get into that government contracts, I think the best way to do it is make sure you have the right experience, because, you know, there are a lot of people that are competing for those easy jobs like janitorial and things like that, right? And the biggest way to make a profit is not to be in a commoditized industry, to be in a specialized industry. Because once you're in a specialized industry, very few people understand GASB, which is, you know, the governmental accounting standards. And so you're automatically putting yourself in a position that you're going to be able to charge at a premium. Versus janitorial services, you might have 50 people competing for a request for proposal for a bid opportunity. And when you have more people, it's supply and demand, right? So the more people that are bidding, the lower the price is going to drop. And then the less profit you're going to make, and the less profit you make, the less you're going to be able to scale your business. And a lot of government contracts end up at a loss because of that.
I see. Well, that's very good advice there, because I haven't had a ton of people on who work with that. So I was a little bit curious in case we have someone that was wondering about that industry. So very good to know. So I know the book you wrote is Profit First for Minority Businesses. So what made you want to write your own version of it specifically geared to minority business owners?
You know, I think that we come with a different set of challenges as minority business. I mean, one, you know, I am a minority, right? So I feel like I understand that. And, you know, just my background, you know, my father's Chinese, my mother's African American. And, you know, a lot of us are first generation entrepreneurs. And if we're going to make it big, most of the time we're the first ones in our family to ever make it big. And we are literally paving our way. And right now we're seeing this transition in the world where we're the first ones to go to college. You know what I mean? We're the first ones to get that corporate management job. We're the first ones to really lead our family into a brand new legacy. But with that, there's challenges because there isn't that legacy that's passed forward. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. We don't come from Rockefeller families. You know, some of us are the first generation to own our own homes. You know what I mean? And so by creating this book, Profit First for Minority Business Enterprises, that not only intermingles the profit first concept, but also the different challenges that we have, like the government contracts, the not knowing the tax strategy, right? Because there's a tax strategy. A lot of businesses get in trouble for their taxes, right? And not understanding that, not understanding, I mean, even the simple concept of being able to go into a room where nobody looks like us, you know what I mean? Like, and Keisha, you've been there. You're in the corporate sphere. You understand what it's like to go in a room and be the only African-American woman in the entire room. You know what I mean? I've been there for years. And the courage to ask for the contract when you're the only one that has ever looked like you, it takes a lot of boldness. It takes a lot of, you know, of confidence to do that. And so I wanted to write a book that really addresses the challenges that we have as minorities in terms of running businesses that are just not just there, but business, and it's called Profit First Minority Business Enterprises because it's addressed towards businesses that want to scale on that level, that really want to go into that seven-figure mark, which, by the way, only 4% of small businesses ever hit $1 million in revenue.
I know. It's such a a small percentage of us. So I'm glad that you have that resource out there, too, to help guide more of us to get to that point. And speaking of that, so what would you say would be, your top, three financial recommendations that, all minority business owners and we, all of us pretty much need to be implementing to be successful in our businesses financially?
Ooh, I love this. We get to talk money.
Yeah. We need to talk about it more. I feel like.
My first suggestion would be, this is for entrepreneurs out there, would be one is, know your end game. Know your end game. And know what's important to you. Know what your immutable laws are and what your values are. Because every decision that you're going to make and over your course of your business, over your course of your life, you're going to have to make many, many decisions, right? If you don't know your values, then the whole world determines your values for you because everybody's going to constantly be pushing their values on you. Whether that's your customer that's asking you to lowball your prices, right? Or asking you to do things that you probably, that are not in the best interest of your company, right? If you don't know your values, you're not going to be able to know what you stand for. Employees, right? If you don't know your values, you're going to easily let the wrong person into your company that isn't going to get you where you want to go. So you got to, first of all, know your immutable laws and know your end game, know your end goal. And really knowing those values are going to be the next step to everything else, right? One of the first things I do when I work with my clients on tax strategies, I go, what is your long run goals? What is your end goal? What is your goal at the end of the day? And the reason why I ask this question is because your strategy is going to be determined based upon your end goal. For example, if I am going to want to retire in 10 years, right? I have a different income goal, right? And a different strategy goal that I need to do in order to make that retirement goal, right? Mm-hmm. And so a lot of your average CPAs will tell you, just buy a truck to get a tax deduction. That's what they'll tell you. Go out and buy a truck. You get a Section 179 deduction. I will never tell you to buy a truck unless you need a truck. If you're in construction and you need a truck, by all means, buy a truck. But don't go buy a truck if you don't need a truck. Mm. You're a CPA firm, you don't need to buy a truck. You have no business buying a truck if you're a CPA.
Yeah, it's what are you driving around?
Exactly. For a tax write-up. So I'm going to pay $30,000 to get a $10,000 tax deduction. Doesn't make sense, right? Mm-hmm. And so I'll say, let's look at aggressive tax strategies. Maybe if you're the only employee that's in your company, maybe we can set up what we call defined benefit plan. Maybe we can set up a pension, right? So that, we can aggressively, if you're we work for a lot of high net worth people. Maybe if we set up a pension and you're already up in age, right? Because pensions are based upon actuarial science, based upon how old you are, how much you need to collect by a certain date by to retire, which can be a generous write-off, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe that's the best vehicle for you. It allows you to have a current tax deduction now, right? So it reduces taxable income for you, but you're not spending the money. You're investing it for later on, right? Mm-hmm. And so again, we're applying what we want to get where we want to go by using tax strategy versus going out and buying a truck.
Yes. And just doing things because you saw someone else do it. Yeah, exactly. Being specific to your goals and the strategies that are going to make sense for you. I love that.
Exactly. Exactly. And so, and because that's going to tie in with our tax strategy too. And then also later on, how do I want to generate income? How do I want to generate income that's going to be in a lower bracket? Right. And so I'm going to think about things like, okay, I want to generate income in a lower bracket. And right now I'm in a higher bracket. So I need to start investing in things that are going to produce perpetual cash flow for me at a lower rate, right? So maybe what if I have a really profitable year, instead of going out and buying trucks, what I'm going to do is I'm going to invest this into rental property, right? That's going to generate cash flow on, and I'm going to get tax and technical on a Schedule E, right? That's not subject to Social Security and Medicare tax. Mm-hmm. And then maybe I'll get even more sophisticated. Maybe if I already have investments, right, and I'm selling them because the market's wonky right now, going up and down, and mm-hmm. I want to sell high, buy low, right? And I get the peak in the market. Maybe I want to invest in what we call qualified opportunity zones, right? Mm-hmm. And in a qualified opportunity zone, what it allows me to do is tax defer my capital gain.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So again, it's understanding your strategy, understanding your end goal, and making the tax work for you.
Mm-hmm. Very nice. I love those recommendations. And you kind of just made me think too, like with things going on with the pandemic, if people are kind of worried about like cash flow or like just worried about maybe hitting their income goals. Do you have any kind of recommendations there for them to kind of protect themselves and their business financially until things kind of calm down?
Oh yeah,
with the pandemic right now.
You know, it's the pandemic's been really interesting, Keisha, because mm-hmm. while there's been high unemployment and a lot of suffering that's been happening in the world, I have also seen the biggest wealth transfer happen during this mm-hmm. pandemic. Mm-hmm. And I think there's two key things that I think about when I think about the pandemic. And one thing that I think about is, one is know your numbers. Know your numbers. You'd be surprised how many entrepreneurs I meet. Then I ask them, so what is your income? And they're like, I don't know. Know your numbers. And the reason why you need to know your numbers and see your numbers is because if sales are going down, right, because there's less sales that's happening, then your expenses need to go down in proportion. So if you're buying inventory to sell and your sales are down 30%, your inventory purchases and your cost of goods sold also needs to be down 30%. Mm-hmm. Right? Otherwise, you're going to have high inventory, low sales. And guess what? You're not making a profit and you're hurting your cash flow, mm-hmm. right? And so by constantly watching your numbers and adjusting to what's happening in the economic times, you're able to make quick decisions versus looking back and go, oh man, I should have done this.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Very smart.
The other thing I would say, too, that's really important, Keisha, during this time is as you're spending money, right? And you're making decisions, you know, a lot of people went out and they got these EIDL loans, these economic injury disaster loans.
Mm, oh, yeah.
And part of me thinks that's the worst thing they could have done. And the reason why is they're going out, they're getting these $150,000 loans, which, by the way, you could buy a house of $150,000 loans. Mm. You can't use that on EIDL, but you know, that's a lot of money, $150,000 on a loan. And the EIDL loan is specifically for operating expenses. But if you're using this money for operating expenses, right, and you're trying to keep employees on your books or you're trying to keep your rent going, right, these are things that don't have a return on investment, right?
Mm-hmm.
So why would you get an EIDL loan when there's no return on investment? So when I'm spending money, the thing that I'm constantly thinking about is what is my ROI on every expense that I make? How can spending this dollar generate me $10 in the future?
Mm, I love that. So maybe like things like maybe investing in ads, would you consider that something that would give a good ROI? Or
it depends.
Yeah.
It depends on a lot of things because, you know, those ads can be very tricky. You know, yeah. Facebook ads can be tricky. If mm-hmm. you don't know what you're doing, you could be spending $22 a lead that might not close.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point. Yeah.
So advertising, what we like to see is a 10 times ROI. And so when I'm looking at advertising, I'm constantly looking at what is the results that I'm getting from this advertising. So when my customers call in or potential prospects call in, I go, hey, how did you hear about me? How did you hear about me? And they'll go, oh, I saw you on Facebook. I saw you on Google. And I go, okay, that is having an ROI. And I'm keeping mm-hmm. a spreadsheet and I'm tracking, okay, this customer called in for Google. This mm-hmm. is how much this customer has a lifetime value because the customer has a lifetime value, right? Especially when it can be a repeat business.
Oh, yeah.
And so looking at that, you know, what advertising source is producing the biggest ROI, because maybe my community newspaper is not the place I need to be advertising at.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Definitely good advice to making sure you track, because that's something I kind of had to make sure I went back and did in the beginning from like my discovery call appointment calendar. I would ask like, so how did you hear about me on that? Because in the beginning, I just had appointments coming in and I'm like, I have no idea where these appointments are coming from. So it was good. So I could export all that data into like a spreadsheet and see which ones were generating the most appointments. So,
yep.
So perfect.
Very important stuff.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
It'll keep you from wasting a whole lot of money by tracking it.
Yes, exactly. It does. So I just have one more question for you around like when different fears and things come up. I know with you on the path to growing your seven-figure business, I'm sure a lot of different fears and maybe mindset things have come up along the way. So whenever a new challenge comes up and a new fear that you have to face comes up as you implement something new in your business, how do you overcome that stuff and work through it so you can reach the goals that you have for yourself?
And it really depends on the fear, right? It really depends on the fear, because sometimes we have fear because it actually does protect us from things. You know, when we're faced with decisions and we got a lot of pressure to say yes and something tells you to say no, listen to that no. Listen to it.
Yeah.
There's two things that I rely on, and they kind of go completely against each other, but they actually do work together in this magical way. One is, you know, I'm a very logical person. You know, at the end of the day, I love to track. The numbers don't lie. You know, how do they add up? What's the likelihood of something happening? What's the potential ROI? So I'm constantly weighing what is the win in this potential opportunity? What is there for me if I would take it? And what is there that I could lose? And does the win really outweigh what I could lose? So just using that logic and just putting things on paper, cranking the numbers, that has always been a lifesaver for me. And then the other part is there's a point that there has to be faith. There has to be faith involved. And if everything is telling me to go for this, and this is where I'm a spiritual person, I might have to pray about it. And if I feel that that's my calling, my next best step, then it is most likely something I'll pursue too. So the two have to align. There has to be a cross and that bridge where, you know, the opportunity exceeds the potential cost. And I have to know that in my faith, that's my next best step.
I love that, because that's what I think a lot of times when people do let fear stop them, they don't think about the opportunity piece and what they may miss out on, you know, if they let the fear get in their way. So I love that you focus on the long term and then make sure you are reminding yourself about that. So good, good. So any last words of advice that you would give to entrepreneurs, particularly ones who may be just starting out in regards to like their finances or their mindset or anything like that?
You know, everything that you do will determine your next best step, right? Everything that you do. And everything builds upon the last thing. And always keep in mind what you want your ultimate outcome to be. It would be that really, it's about taking your profit first. Why did you start your business? And staying in tune with the why. And always make sure that every action that you take is in line with your why. And that's how you'll progress forward.
I love it. Yes, that's what I'm always telling people, to get in touch with your why. Because even when you're experiencing like those low motivation moments or like a moment of discouragement, when you remind yourself of like, why are you even doing all this? It makes you just continue to push through no matter what happens. So very good advice there. So good, good. Well, you have definitely been great to chat with, Suzanne. I love all the advice that you have shared. I know it's going to help a ton of people out in this financial area. So where can they get more from you? Like if they want to check out your book or even check out your services or follow you online?
Well, the book will be published in 2021. Okay. The best way to kind of watch about the book and when it's coming out and get on that list so that you'll know it as soon as it's released is to go to my author site, which is Suzanne. And Suzanne is spelled with an S, so no Z. It's S-U-S-A-N-N-E, Mariga, M-A-R-I-G-A.com. And also, we do teach a free masterclass. If you ever want to just learn about Profit First, I teach you the ins and outs of Profit First, and I do it absolutely for free. And I have a Facebook group where we do that. And it's called Profit First Masterclass with Suzanne Mariga. So Profit First Masterclass with Suzanne Mariga to get our free Profit First training.
I love that. Yes, I love a good masterclass. So very nice. Well, thank you so much for sharing all of your words of wisdom and all of these tips and strategies. And I'll be putting those links, everybody, in the show notes so you can check out Suzanne's website and her Facebook group and that masterclass and get all the info. So thank you so much for coming on to chat with me, Suzanne.
Thank you, Keisha. It has been an honor.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Again, if you are ready to get started with building or growing your business, selling your service online, make sure you check out my free masterclass on the 3 steps to book high-paying clients consistently in the show notes. I will talk to you in the next episode.